You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, CPA and Certified Financial Planner, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can also listen anytime online at wdiy.org. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's show is pre-recorded for your listening pleasure. Basically, that means if you have questions, you can't call them in tonight, but you may send them through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I will answer them as timely as I am able. With me this evening is Andrea Schumann, Director of Marketing at Valley National Financial Advisors and assistant to Your Financial Choices each and every week. Andrea has agreed to help me out tonight, so you don't have to listen to me the whole time. We are going to have a conversation tonight about making choices and making the best of your choices in your financial life. Andrea, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
A client wanted some tips for the young adult child they had, so I came up with a quick list of financial planning tips for anyone to use. Then I thought this would be a great premise for the show tonight. So I thought what we would do is we'll run through these and then go through a typical day to demonstrate the financial choices you make every day that have a ripple effect on your finances. And Andrea is going to help me go through those tips.
So, Laura, you've given me a few here, and they're tips for good financial planning choices at a young age or any age. These can be applicable to all listeners out there. Number one, spend less than you make. I mean, it sounds like a simple concept, but something that people have a lot of trouble with. So what do you think about people who are constantly spending more than they have?
Well, I think that they get into habits that they need to start controlling. So in reality, when we're saying spend less than you make, it means don't spend more than you make and don't even spend as much as you make, if you can kind of understand that. So I say spend less than you make, but really it's don't spend more than you make, which means you're going to be buying on credit and running things up like that. But don't even spend as much as you make, because if you spend as much as you make, you're still not saving. You're just flat. So how you do that is start developing some methodology for spending less. Think discipline. You need to be disciplined enough and control your impulses to buy or spend without thinking. So you also need to avoid spending on credit if you can't pay it off each month. So some people can spend on credit. If they're paying it off each and every month, that might be okay because they actually could be getting rewards and things like that on their credit cards. But you don't want to be accumulating. So if you can't control it and have the discipline to control your spending, don't spend on credit.
That's a dangerous trap to fall into, especially if you're not sure what kind of interest rate you have on your card or what kind of finance charges you're getting hit with. You just use it without even looking, and then after a while you're accumulating this balance that you're not making the payments on, or just maybe making the minimum payments, but that's not even putting a dent in it, and then you find yourself in maybe some trouble.
So you need to know what interest rate you have on your credit cards. And it's amazing to me how many people don't really realize that. I have had clients come in and they tell me they're paying off a particular credit card. And when they look, they realize they're paying off the credit card with the lower interest rate, and they're continuing to accumulate balances on the higher rate credit cards. So one of the first good financial planning tips in controlling your spending is also to make sure that you understand what interest rates are applying. Don't run balances. If you don't run balances, you don't have to worry about the interest rates. But assuming we're catching you in the middle of your financial rebirth, so to speak, so you're now listening to the show, you're realizing you need some good financial planning tips, and you're catching on to this, and you are someone who already has credit card balances, what do you need to do? What can you do? First, make a list of all the rates that you have on your credit cards, and then access a service like bankrate.com. There you can go and see what kind of interest rates are available out there on different cards and what kind of benefits come with each of those cards. So you must understand the rates you have. You must understand other rates that are out there. You also want to be aware that when you have a credit card that you think you have a good rate on, if you make a late payment, that rate may go up. Those low rates aren't always guaranteed if you're not timely with your payments. So you want to make sure that you understand the terms of whatever credit card you have. You also want to find out other benefits that may be available, or other charges that might apply. If your credit card can be used as a debit card, for example, and Andrew, you might be more familiar with this because I don't use debit cards, but there are sometimes places that charge a fee for using a debit card. So you want to make sure that you understand all those costs that might be involved beyond just the interest rate.
Right. And there's a lot of information out there, so it takes a good show like this to bring them all to light. Number three, what we were talking about, know that what you do and how you handle money affects your credit, which will affect how much credit in the future will cost you and be available to you. Home purchase, I'm thinking, something I've gone through very recently myself.
I didn't want to put Andrea on the spot for the show tonight, but yes, I was thinking of Andrea when I made up this list, in fact. So Andrea's a new homeowner.
Hearing and seeing a lot about your credit score, you'll become very familiar with it during that process, as I've learned. So,
were you happy with your credit score? I mean, if
yes,
you could disclose
yes,
that.
Very, okay. I was happy, and I purchased a home with my fiance and didn't know what his credit score was, which is, you know, something I advise people who are on this path, that something you should know about each other, know your each other's credit scores. It's good information to have. But yes, we were in pretty good standing and didn't have any issues there. So I was very grateful for that.
It all helps. That's funny. Part of the pre-marriage rites, find out your fiance's credit scores. So why this is important is, as Andrea had mentioned, credit scores are important when you're going to establish credit for home purchases, for credit cards, and even if you're going to rent or get a job, employers or landlords can check your credit score to see how likely you are to make your payments, how timely you make your payments, and this can all be found in a credit score. So when we say what spending habits you have now during your lifetime, during your young adulthood, has an impact on your credit score. Now, if you find that in your younger years, maybe you weren't as good with money, but then as you become more responsible or you get a better job, you start making more money, you're able to make those payments, that too will affect your credit score. So if at one time your credit score wasn't good, or you weren't timely with payments, or you were late with payments, as I say when I say timely, or you didn't make payments, you can still change that. It's not too late. So you want to start taking responsibility for those things now. Some of the things that affect credit scores are your payment history. So as I said, payment history is the timeliness of your payments, if you've made payments on time or if you've not made payments for information, for example, the amount of past due balances that you've been running, the number of times you've had past due amounts. So that's payment history, and payment history factors in for about 35% of your credit score. Amounts owed counts for 30% of your credit score. So if you're running big balances, the number of accounts you might have, so a number of different factors in there. Length of credit history, that's 15% of your credit score. So if you just established a credit card, 3 months ago, it's going to be hard for you to have a good credit score already. You want some length of credit history. So you want to start establishing good habits now while you're young. New credit, 10% of your score. That, again, is probably how much or how often or how many accounts you're opening up recently. And 10% of the types of credit used, so department store credit, major credit cards, that type of thing. You can get more information on what affects your credit score at myfico.com. That was a website that I found with this information. There's a lot of different information out there on the websites that you can check out. It's mainly important for you to know what's going to apply to you. By controlling your payments, controlling the amounts that you owe, controlling the length of your credit history and the new kinds of credit that you're applying for, that will factor into your credit score. And we're going to be going to a break soon, but when we come back from that break, we will talk about the various reasons of why having a good credit score can help you save money in your future. We will talk about also working, employer benefits, getting health care benefits, tax benefits of different options that you might have. Basically, we're talking about different ways for you to make good financial choices each and every day. We're going to talk about ways to find money. I find it interesting that every day, people, when it comes time for raises, they'll hope for a dollar an hour raise or 50 cents an hour raise, and they don't realize that they can give themselves a raise basically just by watching how they're spending and controlling their spending and making good choices in their financial life each day. Should we take our break now? We're going to take we have a couple more minutes, so I'm going to go
I'll throw ahead. Something in okay, since you're talking about, and I think we're going to get there eventually, but about your using your credit history specifically for the mortgage process definitely affects what kind of rate you get, because every place we called and we shopped around, they gave you this is what rate you'll get if you have a great score. This is what rate you'll get if you have a good score. A lot of the banks were offering mortgages with the private mortgage insurance, the PMI, for certain credit scores. And that's not something that we wanted to consider. We really just wanted a conventional loan and didn't want to have to worry about the PMI. And that's, can be hundreds of dollars a month on top of your mortgage payment. So definitely want to make sure that credit score is in good standing if you're thinking about purchasing a home in the next couple of years.
And it can make a difference on how quickly you qualify for that mortgage as well. If you have better credit scores, the mortgage bankers can run your credit history quicker and acknowledge that you qualify for a loan much faster. So I would assume that is beneficial in the process when you're looking for a house, you're trying to put a bid in on it.
Right.
And you want to get that house quickly.
And you want to lock in a good rate too. So that's, another thing. We were grateful that the credit scores checked out so quickly, like you said, because the rates can fluctuate day to day, and we wanted to make sure we got a good one, which they're out there right now. So,
okay, great. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on making good choices.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. This is a pre-recorded show this evening, and we're talking about making choices and making the best of your choices in your financial life. Very appropriate for the title of our show, Your Financial Choices. And it's about making good decisions each and every day and how those decisions affect each aspect of your financial life, and they culminate in good financial planning for you. Also this evening, I have with me Andrea Schumann. She's the Director of Marketing at Valley National Financial Advisors, and she helps each and every week with the show. So Andrea's here to talk with me, and we're bouncing things off each other. So we have talked a bit about already tips for good financial planning choices at any age. First one we talked about was spending less than you make, and I mean that literally, spending less than you make. You hear about people spending paycheck to paycheck. That means they're spending what they make. There's no way you can save if you're spending what you make. And some people spend more than they make, which means they're accumulating credit. And credit costs a lot of money and eventually will affect you in your later life as far as options available to you for applying for credit, interest rates that you have to use when you're getting mortgages, and things like that, and how quickly you'll be able to retire, because the more credit you have, the longer it takes you to pay that off, the longer it will be before you can retire. So the whole theme tonight is start early, start young, but these tips apply to everyone at every age. Andrea and I were talking a bit about FICO scores and watching what you're spending on credit and establishing good credit, and how the FICO score is something that organizations, entities use when deciding to lend you money. So you go to borrow, whether it's a mortgage or a credit card company. But I also had mentioned that landlords may use it as to whether to rent to you or not. And employers may look at it for you in hiring you, especially if you're in a sensitive position where you may be handling money, that they will use to see to make sure you don't have any money problems. So those FICO scores are important for a variety of reasons. Andrea just had gone for a mortgage. She bought a house with her fiance. And actually in the studio, a question had come up. We had talked about knowing your fiancé's credit score. How do you ask those kinds of questions? And that's something that people probably don't think to ask, do they?
Right, or they ask too late. Because it's an area of compatibility like anything else. And we've seen these articles like on Yahoo headlines once in a while, and they'll have these little quizzes that you should take or little articles about getting your marital finances in order and everything like that, and learning your money compatibility. And it's very important because obviously it affects all aspects of your relationship and your lives as individuals. So it came up somehow, but obviously in the process of buying a home, it's you're seeing your credit score and your dreams, and it's everywhere during the day. You just can't get out of your head because everybody's looking at it. And if you're shopping around for a mortgage, they're going to be looking at it every time.
Well, I suppose one way to handle it is if you can't come out and ask the direct question, it could come up in conversation, though, based on what you're saying. If, let's say, you go out to dinner and one of you pulls out the credit card, the other could say, oh, what kind of interest rate do you have on that credit card? So one big clue to someone, you know, financial compatibility and, you know, if these people know about credit scores would be, are they aware of their interest rate? So that would be something you can casually say, oh, what kind of interest rate do you have on that credit card? And if your companion, life mate, whatever, says, oh, I don't know, that might be an indication. Or if they're always paying cash, you could say, oh, do you have any credit cards? And then have a conversation about that. Oh, why don't you have credit cards? Oh, because you always pay in cash. Oh, do you realize that if we always pay in cash, we're not establishing a credit history? If we don't have a credit history, when we go to buy a house, we may not qualify for a mortgage. So maybe we should go apply for a credit card. And then you can see how they handle that. Especially if someone's used to paying in cash, they probably already are a good candidate for someone to establish good credit history because they already have learned the discipline of not spending beyond their means.
Right.
So that's one way to
have my case, it was he didn't have a credit history because he had grown up in a household that paid cash for everything. And that was just the way they did things, and maybe didn't realize going into your 20s that having a credit history and a good credit history can actually be beneficial to you when you go to make some bigger decisions down the road, like buying a car or renting an apartment, because we definitely had our landlord check before we bought the house. We live in an apartment where it's one of the first things they asked for was the credit score. Wow. And it helps in all areas.
See, I had never remembered that. So you actually experienced that a landlord would have looked at your credit score.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't recall ever having that happen. It's been a long, long time. But that is, you know, should be of particular interest for listeners who are still at home, getting ready to go out there in the real world, because that could also make a difference in the building that you're going to be in and what kind of rates you can get. If someone's not going to rent to you, you may have to go to more expensive apartments. So be aware of that and start establishing some credit. So we've learned then that having good spending habits, developing a good credit score starts young and can save you money later through getting you into the apartment you want to get, getting you into the job that you want. And it will also help with expediting getting a mortgage. Andrea had pointed out earlier, if you see a house and you want that house quickly, other people are bidding on it. If you can get through that credit process faster than the other person bidding on the house, you may be the one who gets first dibs.
Especially if you live in a competitive market, like my little sister trying to rent in Manhattan right now. It's super competitive. So anything that gives you that edge where they might say, we'd prefer to rent or sell to this person for whatever reason, anything that just kind of makes you stand out in a better light, it's really worth it.
And that's what we say each week here at Your Financial Choices. We say be proactive, not reactive. So if you're proactive, you're ahead of the game. If you're reactive and all of a sudden you're in that market and you find out, oh, what? Wait, I have to have a good credit score? And then you're trying to like rush around and figure out how you get a credit score. Guess what? It takes a long time to establish a credit score. I want to give an example that I found online for a 30-year mortgage and the difference a FICO score can make to the interest rate that you're going to pay. And this was just an example based on like some national averages. It all depends what interest rate you get depending on your state and whether it's this year, next year, this month, next month, how interest rates fluctuate. But in this example, a FICO score for someone between 760 and 850, the interest rate that they could get in this example was 3.697. So let's call it 3.7%. Someone with a FICO score between 660 and 679, the interest rate was 4.3%. So that's a 0.6% difference. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about that much difference each year over a 30-year period, we're talking about a lot of money. Now, I didn't crunch the numbers for that difference, but we're talking about a lot of money. So where you can affect your credit score by bumping it up into the next higher category, you are then lowering the interest rates that lenders can give you because they have more confidence in you being able to make the payments on those loans. So if you're a sure thing, they're happy to have you, they don't feel like there's as much risk, they're going to give you a lower interest rate and probably loan the money to you faster than they might to someone who has a higher FICO. Okay, so that is talking about spending less, of course, making those good decisions to help you spend less by getting lower interest rates and controlling your spending. All of that is good. It all adds up. And we talked about FICO scores. So, Andrea, we've gone through tips 1, 2, and 3, and we're going to move on to tip 4.
And tip 4 is talking about the employer benefits you want to consider when you're job hunting and how benefits can be different for part-time employment versus full-time employment. Sometimes there are no benefits for part-time work, and you really need to know that before you take a job. If that's something that's going to affect your decision, you should be looking for retirement benefits like a 401k with employer matching. You should maybe be considering if they have healthcare benefits, because that's a huge plus. if you get paid vacation time, that's also a huge plus. And how you go into an interview to address all these concerns without turning the interviewer off and making it seem like that's all you care about is the benefits. But at the same time, you want to be informed about what kind of benefits you'd be eligible for if you're employed there. So what do you think is the trade-off there?
Well, I've actually interviewed people where if they ask the questions up front, like how many vacation days do I get, or, you know, what are the benefits, and that seems to be their top concern, that makes me a little nervous about what their driving force is for taking this job. First and foremost, we want to make sure that when you're hiring employees, that they're in it for the job, love the job, want to come in and do a good job. The benefits are just like those extra things. So that's from my point of view as someone interviewing. So that's why I'm saying you want to be careful about the questions you're going to ask. But for you, the person interviewing for a job, when we talk about making good life decisions, good choices in your financial life, the kind of job you get and the kind of benefits that are going to be available to you all add into that. You know, if two jobs are virtually the same, the big differentiating factor in your financial life will be the benefits that either of those positions offer you. So if you have at one company the opportunity to work at, you know, $10 an hour, and you have that same opportunity at another job, but one offers healthcare benefits, well, already that's a plus. So you want to make sure that you're addressing that when you're in an interview, so as to not turn off the person you're interviewing with. What you can do is make sure that the position's going to work for you first. So go through the normal interview process, ask all the questions relating to the job, to the people who work there. What kind of retention have they had? What kind of responsibilities are you going to have? Is there room for advancement? Because remember, too, advancing is also going to help you in your financial life. So you want to make sure that you see that as an option out there. And then when you feel like you're getting comfortable, what could end up happening in the interview is the interviewee will start selling you on the position. And then they may start to say, oh, we have these benefits at the company. We have, you know, employer matching on retirement accounts. We have healthcare benefits. So if they're starting to sell you on those benefits, that's perfect. You don't have to ask those questions. But if you're not getting those answers that you need, at some point you need to say, okay, this is all sounding great. This job sounds like something I definitely could do. It sounds like a great place to work. Can we talk a little bit about the benefits that might go along with this position if I take it, so that I can plan what I might need to do if I were to take this position? And hopefully then that'll bring that up in conversation, where the interviewee will start to say, oh, yes, of course, you know, we have healthcare, we have this. It'll remind them that you also need to have that part of the conversation as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about making good choices, good financial choices, each and every day. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices with your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA and a CFP. That's a certified financial planner, which is why I think it's so important to make sure that you put financial planning in every aspect of your daily decisions every day, because so much of our life revolves around how we are handling our money choices. We have in the studio with us this evening, Andrea Schumann. This is a pre-recorded show for your listening pleasure. Again, basically, I can't take your calls live tonight, but we can take them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have any questions while we're out tonight, send them through there, and we will do our best to answer those questions. We're talking about making some good financial planning choices at any age. We've talked about spending less than you make. Sounds basic, but we will tie this all together a little bit at the end of the show, where Andrea will go through a typical day where we can find ways to save a few dollars here and there. We've talked about what spending costs you. You need to make sure that you understand that. Some people just think they're, you know, paying $10 for, you know, that book at the bookstore, but if they're putting it on credit, they're paying more than $10 if they're not paying off their credit card, meaning you might be paying interest on that credit card. So know what spending is costing you. We also talked about how you handle your money each and every day. How you handle credit affects something called your FICO score. Your FICO score is that credit score that different lenders look to see how you have done in your payment history and amounts you've borrowed and how much you owe. And that credit score helps them determine how fast they're going to give you money and at what interest rate they're going to give you money, and even sometimes whether a landlord will rent to you or not. So we've talked about that. We've talked about looking for jobs, employer benefits. When you go to get a job, part-time and full-time, sometimes part-time employers, part-time positions don't give you benefits. You need to know that up front. You need to know how that's going to impact you as you go through your daily life, day-to-day, health cost, vacations. If you're going to want to take a family vacation every year with your family and you didn't realize you don't get vacation pay as a part-time employee, or you don't get paid, you know, a week's vacation, what is that going to cost you? And how do you plan for that and make sure you have the money available to not only be off, but also to enjoy your vacation? So we gave you a few hints about when you are applying for a job to ask about the benefits that the employer can give you, because you don't want to come off looking like that's all you're in it for. That could turn off an employer, which means it could turn them off from hiring you. We want to keep you employed, get you that job. You know, this is actually another good point, Andrea. As I'm sitting here talking about this, I realize some people might not think about how they're presenting themselves in jobs, right? I mean, and we have so many people out there right now who are looking for jobs. Again, part of your financial choices is making sure you have some kind of cash flow. So if you need a job, how seriously are you taking these interviews that you may be going on? And what is your, do you have some experience with that, Andrea?
I mean, from seeing, you know, because obviously I've been with Valley National for 4 years now. So we've seen people coming in interviews there. And I obviously have a lot of friends who are in a transitional stage right now. I'm 27, and some people maybe went to grad school after college, and maybe now they're just entering the workforce. But you have to sell yourself. And it sounds like the easiest thing in the world, but you have to make them want to hire you. And it starts with your appearance. It even starts before that, how you handle setting up the interview and how you speak to the people on the phone, how you address them when you arrive. Do you arrive on time? Are you a few minutes early? Are you dressed appropriately? I always think that you should be dressed professionally for a job interview. I don't care what industry it is. Maybe there's some industries that it's kind of accepted to dress down, so to say. But if you're going on a job interview, you should be in a suit. You should look appropriate, because you're showing the potential employer a sign of respect in doing that. That you're coming in there to apply for this job as a professional, and you're appreciative of the time that they're giving you, and you're really hoping that you walk away with a job offer. So just little things that people need to keep in mind as they're going through the process. You have to come in with a certain energy that's you're hoping will be contagious, that then the employer will turn around and say, that's somebody we need to have working for our organization.
So come in with passion.
Yes,
passion,
absolutely. And don't be afraid to let it show. Obviously, you don't want to be jumping on the desk or anything, but but it's, I think, very necessary to sort of let your natural personality show through a little bit, because it also will give you a sense of whether or not you'll fit in there. There's so many different companies in the Lehigh Valley alone of all different sizes, all different industries. You want it to be a good match for both of you to get the most out of it. So you really just, you need to be yourself, but you need to turn it up a notch on a job interview.
And that's being, as well, keeping that energy with the first person you face when you walk in the door. You know, quite often we will even say to the receptionist, how were they? I mean, mm-hmm. So you have to assume that everyone that you come in contact with has a potential for input in whether to hire you or not. So keep that in mind as well. Have the passion and apply for jobs that you could be passionate about. I think that also makes a big difference. Throughout my career, I've had several positions where I didn't respond to an ad. I actually went out and sought the job myself. I said, I want to work at that company, at that location. And I walked in with a resume and asked to meet with the manager and just did it. And I got a couple jobs that way. Obviously, I did respond to certain job ads as well. But you definitely want to make sure your personality comes across in everything that you do so that it'll be a win-win for both and let your passion show through. So that's our little tidbit on finding a job, making sure that you're employed, that we can get you some cash flow. But be very aware of what you're saying, what you're doing, and how you appear as you do it. Body language is important when you're in the interview. Asking intelligent questions in the interview. Again, don't make up questions just to make up questions. Ask about what you're very interested in doing, and that comes across as well.
You made a really good point with body language. If you're somebody who twirls pens, don't hold a pen during your interview, because you will do it and you won't even realize it until it's too late.
Or click so pens. I hear a lot of clicking
like,
of pens.
Like that, you just have to kind of be aware of your own tendencies and plan appropriately. If they hand you a pen or something to fill out, make sure you put it down before the interview starts, because it'll just happen, and by that time it snowballs and there's nothing you can do about it.
And the other thing too, you can look, I know when I've been on interviews, when you walk into an office, sometimes you can catch something that might be familiar to you that would give you something in common with the person who's interviewing you. One time I went into someone's office and they had a bowling ball, and I love bowling and it was kind of fun, and this person had a, I said, oh, are you a bowler? And then they're like, oh, yeah. And then it, you know, prompted a little bit of a conversation about that, broke the ice, made us both comfortable, put us at ease. And, you know, it makes it a little bit more fun. And again, lets your personality come out. So good luck on job interviews and things like that. So when we say that we're hopefully now have gotten the job, where do we go from there?
Well, we had mentioned this a little bit prior to the last break, that if you are fortunate enough to have an employer who matches contributions on your retirement accounts, you really want to be taking advantage of them. And this is where your employer will put money into a retirement account for you, but sometimes that's only if you put money in first. So if your employer does a match, you really want to make sure that you put in some amount to get essentially that free money. And your contribution counts towards your saving part of your budget. So there's no sense in letting that go to waste if it's being offered and you're not doing anything about it. Even if it's, you know, the minimum amount, most likely you won't even miss it. And you have the mindset of knowing that you're making a contribution towards your future, towards your saving, and you're getting something great out of it. And it's money that your employer is giving you just because you're putting something in. So mm-hmm. You're being rewarded for being financially smart.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And that was our tip number 5. Moving on to tip number 6, also in the workforce, this in particular, if you are a part-time employee somewhere where you don't have health insurance as part of your benefits, you want to consider a high deductible health plan if you are healthy and you pay for your own health insurance. Assuming you can save the deductible amount in a separate account. And I'll let everyone know that this is the situation I'm in. I do pay for my own health insurance. So, Lori, what should I be doing?
If you do not have health care provided by your employer and you're one of those people who have to kind of go out on your own, the first thing I guess I would suggest is you have to find a way to look for health plans that are out there. I'm not sure, Andrea, where you started, but I probably would simply start with a Google search and say, you know, health care plans, independent health care plans. And typically these are by state. So you would have to indicate that you're in Pennsylvania. And then there's some sites that would have different options for you. What we're talking about with a health, a high deductible plan is because health insurance costs so much money, if you're the one paying for it out of pocket, if you don't have an employer who's either supplementing it or paying for it, it can be quite a chunk of your living expenses. So by looking for a plan that has a higher deductible, meaning if I go to the doctor and I end up having, you know, I need stitches for something. I hit my head, I have stitches, and getting those stitches is going to cost $600. Well, a high deductible plan might be one where they say you have to pay the $600 because the health insurance won't kick in until you reach your deductible of $1,300. Okay, so if you agree with a health care provider to pay a higher deductible amount, they will lower the premiums for you. Because quite often, you're only going to have those kind of expenditures, especially when you're young and healthy, occasionally. It's not going to happen that often. So they're not taking a very big risk with you if you're agreeing to pay the high deductible and you're healthy. So they can lower the premiums. So you can look for a high deductible plan, which will give you lower healthcare premiums. Now, my fear for this, though, is if you're someone who isn't a good saver and you don't have any money set aside and you do have an emergency whereby you have to come up with $1,300 or $2,000, whatever that high deductible happens to be, we want to make sure you have that money set aside. So what I would suggest, and Andrea, in your case, if you were going to look for a high deductible plan, I would say, Andrea, is it reasonable to think that you could set aside enough money that you could have the payment available to make that high deductible payment? If you can do that, then I say this could definitely be an option for you. And there's something else we can add to that, which is something called a health savings account for people who have high deductible plans. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but we are getting ready to take another break. Folks, when we come back, we will continue our discussion on making good financial choices each and every day and how those inure to your benefit over time. So we will be back in just a few seconds. Thanks.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This evening, you are listening to a pre-recorded show. We thank you for staying tuned. If you do have questions, which we typically take each week on our live show, if you do have questions, you can go through the website yourfinancialchoices.com and we will get back to you as soon as we can. We're going through tips on making the best of your financial choices. I have Andrea Schumann with me in the studio running through things. Andrea is doing a great job. It's a lot of fun having her here with me. And kind of talking about some of the things that are applicable in your daily life. And Andrea is that example here this evening as she's going through a lot of what we're talking about. In particular, I wrote this list up for one of our clients' children. Their daughter is a young adult getting out on her own, wanting to make good decisions. So I came up with a list of items to pay attention to: spending less than you make, knowing what spending's costing you, knowing how handling your money affects your credit, your FICO score. We talked about employer benefits when you're looking for a job, making sure you understand what they are and what's going to be in store for you as to healthcare costs, retirement planning costs, vacation. We've talked about taking advantage of employer matching contributions on retirement accounts. That's free money. If your employer is going to put money into a retirement account for you based on how much you put in, you want to make sure you take advantage of that. And different employers do different amounts, so you want to make sure that you talk to HR, your human resources department, to know what applies to you and when you can start participating in retirement plans. If you're a new employee, sometimes you have to wait a year, sometimes you have to be a certain age or a certain number of hours worked. So you want to make sure you understand all of that. We talked about possibly if you have to pay for your own health insurance, looking into getting a high deductible health plan. This is really more interesting, I would say, for people who are younger and healthier and may not ever have to make big medical payments, that they wouldn't have to pay a high deductible. But if you are going to go this route to save money on health insurance premiums by having the higher deductible, I like to make sure that you have enough money set aside that if in the event you do have some unforeseen medical costs, that you have the money to pay that high deductible amount. One of the ways to save money, put aside that money for that eventual high deductible, is to carve out some money and put it into a health savings account. I'm not going to go into all the details of a health savings account. It's called an HSA because there's a number of criteria that you have to meet to be eligible for it. But if you are eligible, monies you put into this special account, similar to like an IRA, is that you get a tax deduction for it on page one of your return. Again, there's limitations, there's dollar amounts, there's, I think, even age requirements. It depends on your filing status, if you're single or if you're married filing joint, and what kind of health care benefits are available to you, what kind of plan you have. So if you are someone who wants to save money on health insurance premiums, you may be able to do, let's say, a high deductible plan. You might want to do that in tandem with something called a health savings account if you're eligible for it, so that you can get a tax deduction for that. So that's something to watch out for.
And that brings us right into our tip number 7, which is understanding tax benefits that may be available to you if you meet the required criteria. And some of these are what Lori just mentioned, the health savings accounts, student loan interest deduction, 401k plan deferrals for federal income tax, Roth 401k plan options, and retirement savers credit. Now, obviously, our listeners know that we have tons of shows during tax season on these specific examples. So if you have any questions on what I just mentioned, I advise that you hang on, because once January, February, March rolls around, we're going to be doing all sorts of tax shows. But of course, you can always contact Lori through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com as well if one of these sparked your interest that you'd like some information on rather quickly. And our tip number 8, a very important one, I know it's one of Lori's favorites, establish an emergency reserve and make it part of your lifetime discipline.
And this could be one of the hardest things for young adults to do. You need to find the money to establish an emergency reserve. And where are you going to find it? And what I talk about emergency reserve is having some money set aside in the event something happens where either you lose your job and you have signed a lease, you're renting an apartment, you've committed to making these payments, and all of a sudden you've lost your job. You're not going to be able to go into the landlord and say, oh, whoops, well, I lost my job, I can't make the payments. That's not going to fly, and it's not going to fly for very long. So the emergency reserve gives you confidence to have that padding. And so what you want to do is make sure that you have, if at all possible, the discipline to save enough money to have 6 months worth of expenses. You know, in the old days, we used to say 3 months of expenses. Nowadays, I like to say 6 months of expenses. It's easy to say shorter periods of time when you know you can go out and get a job tomorrow very easily. Because that's so much harder to do these days, I like people to have a 6-month emergency reserve. Some people think a credit card can act as an emergency reserve. That makes me nervous. The reason that makes me nervous is because if you put payments on a credit card and you don't have your job, how are you going to make those payments? And you might say, oh, but I have a low interest rate. I have a 0% interest rate on my credit card, so that's a nice option for me. Well, it's not a nice option for you if you can't make your monthly payment. That 0% interest or that low interest rate might only apply while you're in a period of good, timely payments. If you default or get behind, quite often the terms of your credit card will say we can raise the interest rate, or they start hitting you with late payment fees, all kinds of things. So I don't like people to use credit cards as emergency reserves. So you establish a 6-month emergency reserve. Young adults just coming out of college have student loans. They can hardly make those payments probably. Andrea, how do we find money?
I have two magic words here. Automatic withdrawal. And here's why. Because if you look at your finances and you look at your checking account and say, I can't take money out of my checking account and physically place it in a savings account. If it's done for you, you don't even think about it. You don't see it. You just automatically start off with that much less disposable income to work with for the month. And what I found is that it's money I would have spent on completely non-essential items if I had actually had it in my power still for the month. So at listening to show after show where you preach about emergency savings, and I decided I needed to have a fund myself. It totally worked. And it's addicting because I started doing $50 a month. Then I realized, okay, I can handle this. Let's do $50 a pay period. So then it became $50 every 2 weeks. Then I thought, you know, once you see your accumulation there, then it almost becomes exciting. And you think, well, let's see if I can manage $75 every 2 weeks or $100. And of course, you know, if there's months where you need to alter that, you can either put more in or you need to put less, and you can do that. But I'm telling you, once you start seeing these numbers in a bank account or a savings account or whatever you have, and they're high, and then you start thinking, oh my gosh, if something happened, I would actually have the cash to take care of it. It's really empowering, and it does become an addiction where you do want to like almost keep putting money in. And I'm telling you, if you think that you don't have the money to do it, start small, because it's like the first step, and then you really would have most likely spent that money on something completely worthless, and this is so much more important. And that was my experience. So now I don't even have to think about it. I found a savings account online and set it up where as soon as I get that deposit, automatic deposit in my checking account, boom, there it goes, a certain amount just in that mystery account.
So, Andrea, can I ask just for logistics here, for how exactly you did that? Because sometimes what can happen through work, people will have payroll paid automatically into a checking account. Some people will get a paycheck still, like they do in the old, well, what I think is the old days. You get a paycheck and you go into the bank and you cash the check, or you deposit the check into your bank account. Quite often employers now do direct deposit. So they put it directly into, in my case, like a checking account. Mm-hmm. Do you do it through work? Did you set it? Because you can sometimes set up through work direct deposit into two different accounts, sometimes even three different accounts.
Right.
So if you have the capability through work to set up direct deposit of your payroll, you can tell HR, the payroll department, to say X amount of dollars to my checking account and maybe $100 to my savings account. But if that's not available to you, another option you would have is what you did, Andrea.
Right, to set it up in an external account, and just most of them, I think, nowadays have capability to do some kind of automatic withdrawal where they draw out of your checking account into their savings account. And it's a very quick process to set it up, just requiring usually your bank account number, your routing number, and it can be set up in less than, you know, a banking cycle. So, and that was me knowing my discipline to physically take the money out of my checking account and put it away was not something I was very good at. So I realized that was one of my weaknesses and decided that this was the best way for me to handle it, was to not even see it and have it all kind of going on behind the scenes. And And it worked out.
So I imagine initially you had to come up with ways to kind of figure out how to spend less then. Because if all of a sudden you're seeing $50 less in your paycheck or in your checking account or $100 less in your checking account, you had to think more.
You do, but it's also you make more decisions and you make, in my opinion, better decisions because, okay, so maybe you were thinking about going out to dinner. Well, then you don't because you don't have that extra $50. But after a while, you don't notice it. You really don't. And I think for me, it happened almost immediately because, like I said, the money I would have been spending that on wasn't anything important. I couldn't even remember. And that's how you know it's not important. I couldn't remember what I was spending that money on.
You know, it's funny. When I was a young person, I always had money because I've worked from the time I was 12. Always had money. And I would just spend, like, basically on whatever I wanted. And I was one of those impulse buyers. And like Easter, I would have all kinds of Easter things. Christmas, I would have all kinds of Christmas gadgets. And then when I, you know, got married and we had to start watching our spending, I started becoming much more aware of that. And now I pride myself on being like the total opposite of an impulse buyer. I can totally resist almost anything. And I like that. Like when I go through the grocery store line and I can say, oh, I don't need to buy that. I don't need to buy that. That's empowering as well. So that helps with the spending. When we look at spending per day, I'm going to have to go through these real fast. Andrew and I were going to talk about these. Quick things. Coffee drinker, $3 a day times 5 days a week. Let's say you're only buying the coffee when you're going to work, times 52 weeks is $780. Smokers, $5.50 a day. I'm guessing. I don't know what a pack of cigarettes costs, but I'm guessing it's that. Times 7 days a week times 52 weeks is $2,000. So if you want to give yourself a dollar raise, a dollar an hour raise, and you're a smoker, stop smoking. That'll save you $2,000. Watch out for long showers, breakfast foods, driving to work. Are you carpooling when you can? Look at those job benefits. Are you packing your lunch or bringing your lunch? I have a box of oatmeal at work, folks, and I make myself a bowl of oatmeal for lunch when I want something. It's quick, it's easy, and it lasts forever, and I throw some cranberries and nuts in it. So, hopefully all of these little tips helped. One of the other quick tips, if I can still fit this in, is if you think you're going to upgrade your lifestyle, you're going to want to go to a more expensive apartment, or you want to be a homeowner, try spending like you are already. So take 6 months to put away the extra money that you'd pay on that more costly apartment. Put away the extra money you're going to pay for the house. And see if you can manage your budget still. If you can, then maybe you're a good candidate for that lifestyle upgrade. If not, then maybe you're not ready. So you want to make sure you're taking care of the best financial choices that you can. We appreciate you for listening this week. We will be back in the studio next week, and we hope that you can join us. Remember, always pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices each and every week. And Andrea, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lori.
Okay, have a great week. Thanks, Neil, to you too. Bye-bye.